Welcome back. Top of the third hour of today's broadcast, this Thursday, September 26, 2019. I don't know about you, but it's easy for me to become sort of fixated on this kind of stuff. You know, reading Bertrand Russell, I'm always horrified. It's a horrifying fixation. Like, you know, the people who slow down for car accidents. It's that kind of thing. I'm embarrassed to admit, but really, you just, I mean, I've read it, but reading it every time is, gives me the feeling, well, what's he gonna say next? That's horrifying. Oh, that's even more horrifying. What next? More horrifying. Could someone really write something more horrifying than all of the, oh, yep. Sure enough. People actually think this way? How does this get published? People actually adopt these practices? How does this happen? And so, you know, again, it to me, this all goes back to the Reese Committee. It's, I mean, what Rosetta Stone do we refer to? The Reese Committee, which proved that foundations were, in fact, engaging in un-American activities and funding un-American activities. And that, as Thomas McNeice told us in his letter or his report to the committee, there's some funny business going on. You know, McNeice wrote a report titled The Economics of the Public Interest. And just to stop talking around it, and quote McNeice himself, Thomas McNeice, Assistant Director of Research to the Reese Committee, the second committee, that was formed by the House Select Committee to investigate tax-exempt foundations and comparable organizations, because the Cox Committee said, nah, foundations do what foundations do. Everything's fine. So the Reese Committee was commissioned, and Norman Dodd was the director of research. Thomas McNeice was the assistant director of research, and some shocking things came to light. We should get back to Norman Dodd's interview in a minute. So in his report to the committee titled The Economics of the Public Interest, assistant director of research Thomas McNeice wrote, these original studies of the public interest disclosed that during the 4 years, 1933 to 36, a change took place which was so drastic as to constitute a revolution. Another, there's that term, revolution again. They also indicated conclusively that the responsibility for the economic welfare of the American people had been transferred heavily to the executive branch of the federal government. But again, it's the administrative fourth branch, actually, to be completely accurate. The corresponding change in education, and that's what I'm getting at, had taken place from an impetus outside of the local community. You mean the local community used to be in charge of education? Yes. And that this revolution had occurred without violence and with full consent of an overwhelming majority of the electorate. And so these guys look at this and it's a revolution, a change, 1933 to 36, the New Deal era. Took place, which was so drastic as to constitute a revolution. This revolution had occurred without violence and with the full consent of an overwhelming majority of the electorate. And so obviously to these guys, this is shocking. What happened? So they seek to explain. In seeking to explain this unprecedented phenomenon, subsequent studies pursued by the staff clearly showed, it could not have occurred peacefully or with the consent of the majority, unless, what? Education in the United States had been prepared in advance to endorse it. And that's how you get very quickly to speeches like Aldous Huxley's Ultimate Revolution. Again, speaking of Bertrand Russell, Diet injections and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable, and any serious criticism of the powers that be will become psychologically impossible. Even if all are miserable, all will believe themselves happy because the government will tell them that they are so. The government doesn't tell me anything. Well, right, except through sanctioned so-called news outlets, media outlets and things, you know, CIA News Network and fun stuff like that. So it's, you know, goes right back to the Rees Committee's findings of what happened at the turn of the 20th century and has continued forward in conjunction with what folks like Bertrand Russell wrote about. The evidence is all around us. In fact, is there any evidence to the contrary? You know, you start talking to people about this stuff. Where is the evidence of free thought? Where is the evidence of free enterprise? A generation or two ago, there was evidence. Back in the 70s, when we valued, you know, Starbucks is going in down the street, apparently. The small, you know, mom and pop coffee shops, if you will, the little corner stores where people have bootstrapped, so to speak, their own startups, and the community has responded. They've gotten used to this coffee and stuff, and these are small local brands. There are, you know, handful, two, three handfuls of them maybe, and local brands. People have benefited in the local community from these brands. There's coffee that's roasted locally. There is branding that's produced locally. There's swag, shirts, hats, coffee mugs. Sure, that stuff comes from other places, yes. But the branding was created locally and is applied locally. And there are a number of different ripples. Obviously, the wages and the profits are reinvested locally. Community benefits handsomely from those enterprises. In comes Starbucks, apparently, in a location that is central to a number of these other local brands. What do you think will happen? Much of that local commerce will be absorbed into a brand that has no vested interest in the local community. And it will, you know, it's Ross Perot's sucking sound, right? It's that sucking sound he talked about. The giant sucking sound. Vacuuming up the wealth of that society. Yeah, just a little bit. Or I mean that community. Just a little bit, but you know, you get all of these big box brands, what happens? They're siphoning off the wealth of the community. Doing it in Machiavellian fashion, one of those tacit Faustian bargains. Well, I'll go to Walmart because it's always open and I can get anything there. And I'll just order from Amazon one time because I can get it there and it's inexpensive and it's delivered. It's convenient for me. Mm-hmm. Yep, sure is. Sure is. And bad guys have studied you and your parents and their parents, and they know that convenience is a big deal. And again, you know, I can hear Brian saying that we should play it again. Wild and Free Pigs of the Okefenokee Swamp. Just make it easy and convenient for them to be slaves. And then what? And then back to Bertrand Russell, the impact of science on society, scientific technique, and oligarchy. So long as the rulers are comfortable, what reason have they to improve the lot of their serfs? I think the evils that have grown up in Soviet Russia will exist in a greater or less degree wherever there is a scientific government, technocracy, anyone, which is securely established and is not dependent upon popular support. What did we just hear Peter Thiel say? America is not a constitutional republic, not a democracy, whatever the merits or not of democracy are. We are a state that is dominated by these very unelected technocratic agencies. This is a presidential advisor speaking. He's been places and had conversations you and I have not. He's not guessing. It's a very, I would say, educated and articulate statement from a man, and I would call him an unimpeachable witness on this subject. Are you and Peter Thiel friends? No, I'm saying that he's in a position of knowledge, and this is a candid intimation, if we're all willing to take it seriously. You couldn't say it any more clearly and plainly, and that's why, what were the, gosh, I forget, the headlines, like Washington Post ran a headline, Breitbart had a headline. What were they? Let me see if I can find that real fast. Washington Post. Why PayPal co-founder Peter Thiel thinks American democracy is dead. That was one. Breitbart, Peter Thiel, America is a technocracy, not a democracy. Those kinds of headlines. So, wherever there is a scientific government which is securely established and is not dependent upon popular support, and scientific is disingenuous, it's misleading. You know, I suppose the place to go there is lies, damn lies, and statistics. You know, first known, popularizing it of it was Mark Twain, I suppose, chapters from my autobiography. 1906, he wrote, "Figures often beguile me, particularly when I have the arranging of them myself, in which case the remark attributed to Disraeli would often apply with justice and force. There are three kinds of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics." And then you have a number of bad guys who are credited with using this turn of phrase. Guys like Arthur James Balfour. Remember the Balfour Declaration? The Royal Statistical Society and, you know, other fun folks. You know? Yeah. So that's, you know, in a technocratic society, a scientific dictatorship that Bertrand Russell's writing about, it's really lies, damn lies, and statistics. You use the, you know, you torture the data long enough to get that pig to sing any tune you want. That's what you do. So it's disingenuous. Science, to me, as I understood it, science basically validates or it agrees with God and creation. Anyway, that's a whole separate discussion, not to create controversy. But it's truth and fact, and it's constantly seeking truth and fact, and that's why you form a hypothesis and then you try to disprove it. I digress. Continuing. Wherever there is a scientific government which is securely established and is not dependent upon popular support, is that America? I ask rhetorically. It is possible nowadays, Russell wrote, for a government to be very much more oppressive than any government could be before there was scientific technique. Propaganda makes persuasion easier for the government. Remember back in 2016, Oxford English Dictionary Word of the Year, post-truth? You know, the Century of the Self, according to Adam Curtis, Century of the Self, four-part BBC documentary series, Century of the Self. Speaking of propaganda, propaganda makes persuasion easier for the government. Public ownership of halls and paper makes counter-propaganda more difficult. Yeah, like I said, in the Gutenberg era, freedom of the press is guaranteed to those who own one, or the government agency who controls one. or influences even. Public ownership of halls and paper makes counter-propaganda more difficult, and the effectiveness of modern armaments makes popular risings impossible. No revolution can succeed in a modern country unless it has the support of at least a considerable section of the armed forces. What do you do about that? These guys have answers for everything. But the armed forces can be kept loyal. And so I always think of this, my mind always thinks of local law enforcement because of the welding together, the fusing together of military and law enforcement. Continuity of government. So I think of law enforcement too, but he said, Russell wrote, no revolution can succeed in a modern country unless it has the support of at least a considerable section of the armed forces. But the armed forces, parenthetically I would add law enforcement, can be kept loyal by being given a higher standard of life than that of the average worker. And you obviously include into that the fun, shiny, flashy toys. We have cool toys. Look at our cool toys. And this is made easier by every step in the degradation of ordinary labor. Like I said yesterday, I've said before, 25 years ago, $20 an hour was a decent wage. Today it's a decent wage, and inflation has run away. Wages have not paced, which again is that friction that is applied to keep, you know, the undesirables, to eliminate competition from the monopolist's enterprise. Thus, the very evils of the system help to give it stability. Apart from external pressure, there is no reason why such a regime should not last for a very long time. Apart from external pressure, what did Reagan say? Back in 1964, he said, this is the last stand on earth. Is that what he said? If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth. Apart from external pressure, who's gonna free us from the Nazis and fascists among us? There's no reason why such a regime should not last for a very long time. Scientific societies are as yet in their infancy. It's 1952. It may be worthwhile to spend a few moments in speculating as to possible future developments for the of those that are oligarchies. Ah, so here we get into some specific speculations by Bertrand Russell. Remember, this is a guy, generational, old school bad guy, you know, Russell Trust, old school bad guy. And so it's interesting, you know, these are the movers and shakers, these are the influencers. What does he speculate, what does he envision for the future, or envisage, that's their word. It is to be expected, well, maybe I'll save that, we're about to go into a break. Scientific societies are as yet in their infancy, it may be worthwhile to spend a few moments in speculating as to the possible future developments of those that are oligarchies. Is America a technocratic oligarchy? Well, we'll see how it matches up with Bertrand Russell's speculation right after this short break.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75% dandruff. Almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
It's the good life, full of fun, seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love, 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself. Don't try to fake romance. It's the good life to be free and explore the unknown. Like the heartaches when you learn, you must face them alone. Please remember, I still want you. And in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss that good life goodbye.
Welcome back. It's interesting, you know, what do you do with all of this? Well, again, I think in Romans 14 fashion, each person must be fully convinced in his own mind, or her own mind, obviously. That's just my conjecture. So what of the speculation? Scientific societies are as yet in their infancy. It may be worthwhile to spend a few moments in speculating as the possible future developments of those that are oligarchies. Okay, it is Russell wrote, It is to be expected that advances in physiology and psychology will give governments much more control over individual mentality than they now have, even in totalitarian countries. And this is Freudian stuff in particular. And speaking of physiology, that gets back to, this is why, you know, when Rhonda was saying what she was saying, this is why my mind goes here immediately, thinking about, well, what Bertrand Russell wrote. And so speaking of the Big Secret documentary by Alex Voss and Susan Downs back in 2017, you know, you just sort of juxtapose that with what Bertrand Russell wrote and the other things that we were discussing, Rhonda and I, you know, I mentioned the artificially sweetened times, 24 pages of documentation, you know, additional documentation of what Rhonda was talking about, among other resources. So, speaking of advances in physiology and psychology, and as a parenthetical aside, I always wonder, it is shocking to me to think, I mean, to confess to a priest is one thing, you know, you've known this guy your whole life, and that is what it is. But, you know, to think that someone could go be convinced to go talk to a perfect stranger they don't know from Adam because this person has a piece of paper on the wall. And this person probably adheres to at least some form of Freudian psychoanalysis. So you back up to that and you read a little bit about what Freud wrote. He was as sick and disturbed as anyone that he would presumably have treated or ostensibly have treated. Disturbed individual. Just sick mind. So you put those two things together, someone who holds to any of this stuff and that I've never met, why on earth would I want to do that? Why would I subject myself to that? What possible good could come of that? Anyway, it is to be expected that advances in physiology and psychology will give governments much more control over individual mentality than they now have, even in totalitarian countries. Fitte laid it down, that education, Johann Gottlieb Fitte, laid it down that education should aim at destroying free will so that after pupils have left school, they shall be incapable throughout the rest of their lives of thinking or acting otherwise than as their schoolmasters would have wished. Diet, injections, and injunctions will combine. And those three words, diet, injections, and injunctions, again, those are the echoing, sort of reverberating soundbite in my mind for years. Diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable. And any serious criticism of the powers that be will become psychologically impossible. Even if all are miserable, all will believe themselves happy because the government will tell them that they are so. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars, AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
When your doctor tells you you have bad cholesterol or blockages in the arteries, what do you do? When diet and exercise is not enough, we try medications and hope for the best. For the last two decades, I have been telling people about a natural method to help solve these problems and more. Extendivite can help maintain cardiovascular health and lower blood lipid levels in adults. The seven herbs in Extendivite are known to work together synergistically to get the results we hope for. There are many testimonials on Extendivite's effect on circulatory-related ailments. Get Extendivite today to start your journey back to a healthier life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or see us on amazon.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Before I continue, a little history. Operation Paperclip, according to the Wikipedia entry, was a secret program of the Joint Intelligence Objectives Agency, JIOA, largely carried out by special agents of Army CIC, Counterintelligence Corps, in which more than 1,600 German scientists, engineers, and technicians, such as Wernher von Braun and his V-2 rocket team, were taken from Germany to America for U.S. government employment, primarily between 1945 and 1959. Many were former members, and some were former leaders of the Nazi Party. So that's Operation Paperclip. Primarily between 1945 and 1959. 1952, Bertrand Russell's Impact of Science on Society is published. You know, one of the pictures, actually the sort of main picture on the Wikipedia entry, and there could be many that should shock the American conscience, Kurt Debuse, a former Nazi scientist, turned NASA director. NASA director. And that's a whole different discussion we've gotten into in the death cult conversation. You know, Jack Parsons, JPL, all of the occult, esoteric, dark, you know, witchcraft and sorcery. That whole history of NASA and JPL. Kurt Debuse, a former Nazi scientist turned NASA director, sitting between President of the United States John F. Kennedy and Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson during a briefing at Blockhouse 34, Cape Canaveral Missile Test Annex. There's a former Nazi scientist turned NASA director, sitting between the President and Vice President. What could possibly go wrong? Well, back to Bertrand Russell. The impact of science on society, scientific technique, and oligarchy. Yeah, okay. So a totalitarian government with a scientific bent, technocracy America? You know, what did Perigana write? Perigana, emphasis on the con. Technocracy in America, rise of the info state. Here's what we should really have. American democracy just isn't good enough anymore. A costly election has done more to divide American society than unite it, while trust in government and democracy itself is plummeting. But there are better systems out there, and America would be wise to learn from them. In this provocative manifesto, globalization scholar Parag Khanna tours cutting-edge nations from Switzerland to Singapore to reveal the inner workings that allow them that lead the way in managing the volatility of a fast-changing world while delivering superior welfare and prosperity for their citizens. Mm-hmm. The ideal form of government for the complex 21st century is what Khanna calls a direct technocracy, quote-unquote, one led by experts, but perpetually consulting the people through a combination of democracy and data. Isn't that nice? From a 7-member presidency and a restructured cabinet to replacing the Senate with an assembly of governors, technocracy in America is full of sensible proposals that have been proven to work in the world's most successful societies. Americans have a choice for whom they elect president, but they should not wait any longer to redesign their political system following Khanna's pragmatic vision. Yeah, that's so nice. Just another philanthropist, Parag Khanna. Anyway, back to Bertrand Russell. A totalitarian government with a scientific bent might do things that to us would seem horrifying. The Nazis were more scientific than the present rulers of Russia and were more inclined toward the sort of atrocities that I have in mind. So again, Operation Paperclip, anyone? Or for a more unvarnished look at, you know, what preceded Operation Paperclip, what the Nazis thought was really cool to adopt, and then what we re-imported after the war. Edwin Black's War Against the Weak, the Eugenics in America's Campaign to Create a Master Race, is an essential book, waragainsttheweak.com. So, the Nazis were more scientific. They were said, I do not know with what truth, Russell wrote, to use prisoners in concentration camps as material for all kinds of experiments, some involving death after much pain. So again, you know, Operation Paperclip, but also when I think of this, I think of Unit 731, which I usually mention around this point. Unit 731. And usually when I mention this, I think I say, you know, what is vivisection? That's about as close to that subject matter as I want to get on, you know, family-oriented radio. That's probably too much in itself. So Russell wrote, if they had survived, and again, Operation Paperclip, the Nazis with more scientific bent, if they had survived, they would probably have soon taken to scientific breeding. Oh, you mean like the Rockefeller Foundation, that began life as something of a eugenics operation. That organization, the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research, which helped give birth and rise to the National Institutes of Health and so on and so on. They would probably soon have taken to scientific breeding. Tuskegee experiments, anyone. Those kinds of things. Any nation which adopts this practice will, within a generation, secure great military advantages. Who else on the planet spends approaching $1 trillion a year? Which is patently unconstitutional. Patently unconstitutional. But who cares about that? When was the last time Congress declared war? Who has the authority in America to declare war? You know? It doesn't matter. Does it matter? You know, National Emergency Powers, 98-505. CRS report, 98-505. When the Bush 2 administration, the September 18, 2001 update, a week after 9/11, the same day that Norm Dixon's How the CIA Created Osama Bin Laden was published, the same day that was published, and you see all these commercials, never forget, I remember the day, and they're going to attack. Yeah, they who? Who exactly? Who attacked New York and the Twin Towers? Who did that? Who was responsible for that? Go listen to what Aaron Russo intimated, reflecting on his conversations with Nick Rockefeller, speaking of the Rockefeller clan. So the same day Norm Dixon's article, How the CIA Created Osama Bin Laden, was published, September 18, 2001, the Bush 2 administration published the updated, revised CRS report 98-505, National Emergency Powers, leaning on the work of the Senate committee to terminate the national emergency, their work from the early 1970s, and Senate Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency, Emergency Powers Statutes, 93rd Congress, First Session, Senate Report 93-549, GPO 1973. And the excerpt from 98-505 reads, lastly, there are various standby laws which convey special emergency powers once the president formally declares a national emergency, activating them. Again, this gets right back to the interview of Norman Dodd by G. Edward Griffin and what the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and the Ford Foundation in particular were working to foment. So there are various standby laws which convey special emergency powers once the president formally declares a national emergency, activating them. In 1973, a Senate special committee studying emergency powers, boy, that's disingenuous, isn't it? Published a compilation identifying some 470 provisions of federal law delegating to the executive extraordinary authority in time of national emergency. The vast majority of them are of the standby kind, dormant until activated by the president. But see, if you actually read 93-549, one cannot help but be confronted with the prospect that the national emergency should have been terminated, and we've had several of them. There were at the time, the way that they put it in the way the special committee put it. Where is that? From the forward. Yeah. Where is that? Yeah, right from the introduction. A majority of the people of the United States have lived all their lives under emergency rule. For 40 years, this was 1973. So what happened? 1933? For 40 years, freedoms and governmental procedures guaranteed by the Constitution have in varying degrees been abridged by laws brought into force by states of national emergency. The problem of how a constitutional democracy reacts to great crises, however, far antedates the Great Depression. As a philosophical issue, its origins reach back to the Greek city-states and the Roman Republic. That's interesting. And in the United States, actions taken by the government in times of great crises have, from at least the Civil War, in important ways, shaped the present phenomenon of a permanent state of national emergency. American political theory of emergency government was derived and enlarged from John Locke, the English political philosopher whose thought influenced the authors of the Constitution. Locke argued that the threat of national crisis, unforeseen, sudden, and potentially catastrophic, required the creation of a broad executive emergency, executive powers to be exercised by the chief executive in situations where the legislative authority had not provided a means or procedure of remedy. But I'll leave it at that. Anyway, unconstitutional. Who has the authority, the power and authority to declare war according to the Constitution? So you have this stuff and disingenuous reference to it, particularly by the Bush 2 administration. But according to the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8 gives Congress the power to declare war and to raise and support armies, but expressly no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. So who spends nearly approaching $1 trillion a year? Back to Bertrand Russell's Impact of Science on Society. Any nation which adopts this practice will, within a generation, secure great military advantages. The same time Operation Paperclip was happening was the same time we got the National Security Act of 1947, was the same time we got the National Military Establishment. We got, and the year before that, we got the Administrative Procedure Act, institutionalizing the administrative fourth branch of the federal government, which... going back to R.J. Pistrito's Birth of the Administrative State, what's that turn of phrase? Let's see. Yeah, I think that's it, right? So the second tenet of separation of powers, the prohibition on combining functions, has fared no better in modern constitutional and administrative law. As Lawson, Gary Lawson, explains, quote, "The destruction of this principle of separation of powers is perhaps the crowning jewel of the modern administrative revolution. Administrative agencies routinely combine all three governmental functions in the same body and even in the same people within that body," end quote. His example here is of the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. And I've read this example many times. I won't do it now. And we're running out of time. But it's a ridiculous example of circular reasoning. It's ludicrous. And yet this is America? The FTC is a particularly apt example, since it was the quasi-legislative and quasi-judicial character of the FTC that was upheld in 1935 in the landmark Supreme Court case Humphrey's Executor versus United States. The first time that the court so clearly acknowledged that agencies technically within the executive branch could exercise substantially non-executive functions. Really? Great military advantages. You know, extra constitutional military advantages. The system, one may surmise, Russell wrote, will be something like this. Again, one can't help but think of the Rockefeller file, Gary Allen's Rockefeller file, and the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research, the eugenics operation. One may surmise the system would be something like this, except possibly in the governing aristocracy, all but 5% of males and 30% of females would be sterilized. What was, you know, speaking of diet injections and injunctions, what was Rhonda talking about? And, you know, you hear this from doctors. I've heard countless people say, yeah, they said we couldn't have kids. And suddenly they're having children. Wonderful. I think that's great. The 30% of females would be expected to spend the years from 18 to 40 in reproduction in order to secure adequate cannon fodder. How many children are born out of wedlock these days? As a rule, artificial insemination will be preferred to the natural method. Again, a bizarre turn of phrase. The unsterilized, and that is accomplished in a variety of ways, isn't it? Getting back to the conversation Rhonda and I were having. The unsterilized, if they desire the pleasures of love, will usually have to seek them with sterilized partners. Sires will be chosen for various qualities, some for muscle, others for brains. All will have to be healthy, and unless they are to be the fathers of oligarchs, they will have to be of a submissive and docile disposition. Children will, as in Plato's Republic, be taken from their mothers and reared by professional nurses. Daycare, kindergarten. Gradually, by selective breeding, the congenital differences between rulers and ruled will increase until they become almost different species. A revolt of the plebes would become as unthinkable as an organized insurrection of sheep against the practice of eating mutton. Parenthetically, he adds, the Aztecs kept a domesticated alien tribe for purposes of cannibalism. Their regime was totalitarian. And of course, we have all of the, you know, stuff that we've seen in recent years that sort of lends itself to that. Katy Perry, Bon Appetit. To those accustomed to this system, the family as we know it would seem as queer as the tribal and totem organization of Australian Aborigines seemed to us. Freud would have to be rewritten, and I incline to think that Adler would be found more relevant. The laboring class would have such long hours of work and so little to eat that their desires would hardly extend beyond sleep and food and Monday Night Football. The upper class being deprived of the softer pleasures both by the abolition of the family and by the supreme duty and devotion to the state would acquire the mentality of ascetics. They would care only for power and in pursuit of it would not shrink from cruelty. By the practice of cruelty, men would become hardened so that worse and worse tortures would be required to give the spectators a thrill. Such possibilities on a large scale may seem a fantastic nightmare. We're back to that. But I firmly believe that if the Nazis had won the last war, and if in the end they had acquired world supremacy, they would, before long, have established just such a system as I've been suggesting. And so I posit, it's interesting that we got, you know, the fascists in Congress, for example, around the same time, and a lot of the echoes of what Russell wrote seem to have been accomplished in America in this technocratic, this system dominated by these largely very unelected technocratic agencies, as Peter Thiel put it. Again, 30 years of these methods, Bertrand Russell wrote, would have left the West with little inclination to rebel. To prevent these scientific horrors, democracy is necessary but not sufficient. There must be also that kind of respect for the individual that inspired the doctrine of the rights of man. But then he eschews that immediately afterward. beginning with a quote of Jeremy Bentham. You know, Panopticon, Jeremy Bentham. The auto icon, Jeremy Bentham. Who does that kind of stuff? Anyway, to the phones we go. Myrn, Wisconsin, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Myrn.
Thanks for
good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I should call in earlier because I have a lot I wanted to say. And I just saw a large bird of prey, and we've been having a lot of golden eagles, a big increase. And, you know, the different birds come through here this time of year anyway, but you can't really see the golden head unless you're really close, but they're very big, and the young ones still have a white band around their tail. So it's very pretty, you know, things turn into fall. But I wanted to say everything is frequency, and strontium can be taken in as calcium and go to the marrow of the bones and perhaps cause leukemia. And the Schumann resonance is assumed to be 7.83 for millions of years or so, we're told, since 1953. But last week it was 43 hertz and then 99 hertz, which makes barefooting a whole nother experience. But also the frequency of 432 hertz that orchestras played in was changed to 440 hertz officially in 1953 also. And the Rockefeller Institute handed out free instruments. And this has helped propel the acceleration and unrest, as we see. But also, the Rockefellers' real name is Rogenfelder, and they're Sephardic Jews that came through Turkey. And, I mean, you don't think the Rothschild cousins would let anybody but some of the family run the America Goyim Ranch. And so if we have anti-Semitic retroactive laws, I guess they'll be rolling out the guillotines for us. Oh, and the German scientists were booty for winning the war. Nazi is a term that was taken from Austrian-Bavarian colloquialism that meant bumpkin or simpleton, and a Jewish man, Conrad Haydn, used it. I think we all see now, don't you?
Well, I just remember Eustace Mullins saying, you know, national, you know, national socialist
Zionist.
Yes, but this was before
Eustace Mullins. I know, he didn't recognize that. But this is where it came from. So anyway, thank you, Chris. Bye-bye.
You bet. Thank you, Myrn. Appreciate it. That'll do it for today's broadcast. And I hope it was informative, as always. It truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.